This episode of the Sport Lifestyle Podcast is presented by Empirica. That's Empirica, E-M-P-I-R-I-K-A. Empirica exists to amplify your brand's growth, a digital partner to the ambitious, the creative engine launching brands and igniting growth, the unagency where relationships matter, not transactions. Let's connect at EmpiricaMedia.com. That's EmpiricaMedia.com. Let's get the show started.
This is the Sport Lifestyle Podcast, where the trade of sport collides with fashion and innovation. Your hosts, Mike Guggat, Neil Schwartz, and John Peters, break down news, discuss trends, and interview industry influencers. The Sport Lifestyle Podcast is on now.
Hi, and welcome back to the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. On this episode, we speak to Stephen Webster, CEO and founder of Asensei, your software-powered personal trainer who knows your every move. Stephen talked about the five-year journey in bringing Asensei to market, how his time at Microsoft and Adobe helped inform his team when designing Asensei software, why connected coaching is the next big thing, and why he'd rather have a small number of people who love his product versus attracting the masses in the early days. We also worked in a few Adobe jokes with two former Adobe executives on this episode. Now let's get to the interview.
Welcome back to the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, John Peters. And today I'm so excited because we have Stephen Webster joining us to be interviewed. Stephen is the CEO and founder of Asensei. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. So, Stephen, for our audience, always good to start with kind of what Asensei is, how you built it. You know, tell our listeners what Asensei does.
Sure. I usually tell the story as a from to, like, how do we get from the connected fitness category that has existed for the last number of years to the future that Asensei is willing into existence, which is a category we've named and framed as connected coaching. So when I think of connected fitness, I think of millions of people watching millions of workouts on millions of different screens and devices, but nobody's watching them. Nobody's making sure that you're practicing correctly or practicing safely. Nobody's adjusting the pace of teaching to match the pace of learning. So without coaching, without connected coaching, you know, we really just think connected fitness is still just a spectator sport. I look at Jane Fonda, Billy Blank, Tony from P90X. The format of having just a coach on screen, shouting encouragement at you, the top student to his right or her right, the beginner student to the left, and you're just following along. Even today, if you look at fitness apps from Nike Training Club to Peloton Digital to Freeletics, we're still kind of delivering that same experience, right? There's no real understanding of, like, you know, could we make this harder for you? Could we make this easier for you? Could we stop and break that technique down? Kind of like take your technique apart and put it back together. And if your goal is just to bounce around and burn calories and have fun and listen to music, you know, the existing experience is good enough. But when you really want to get off the bike and start looking at, you know, baseball, golf, martial arts, rowing, fencing, kendo, whatever, any sport where posture, technique, and form are important, you can't learn it from a book and you can't learn it from a video. And so that's the problem that we set out to solve. And, I'm happy to get into the details of it. But does that make sense so far? That's kind of how we're thinking about the category.
Yeah. And Stephen, maybe I probably jumped ahead a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit about your background from, the Adobe days and other technology firms you've worked for, because, you know, the one thing, and you and I have joked for years about this, of how slow the sports and fitness industry is to adopt technology and innovation at the ground level and other things. How did, you know, your time at those tech giants, how did that inform some of the things you have implemented into Asensei today? Can you talk about that?
No, that's a great question. So yeah, you mentioned two companies. I'll speak to them in particular. I started my life as a hardware engineer. I was a chip designer. And pretty quickly I figured out I was better at software engineering than hardware engineering, and the mistakes were less expensive than software. So my co-founder Ross continues to this day to be the hardware engineer. But I moved into software engineering, and then I sold a company to Adobe, which is what brought me to California. So I'll talk about Adobe a little, and I'll talk about Microsoft. So, you know, inside of Adobe, I had the privilege of, you know, essentially helping to start the consulting organization, the worldwide consulting organization. And initially, because my background was in technology, I ran the technology group and the innovation group. But what happened to me inside of Adobe was I got design religion. You know, fast forward to the end, when I left Adobe, I was running innovation with a multidisciplinary team of designers and engineers. And we were really one of the first companies in the Bay Area, perhaps other than IDEO, to be really thinking about design thinking. And I know you had David from Essential, you know, on your show before, but that whole idea of design thinking and how can you look at an opportunity, not through the lens of technology or not through the lens of what the business wants to deliver, but how can you really have deep empathy for a consumer and what their unmet needs are? And then how do you use technology and use business models to deliver that best imaginable experience to the consumer? So that's deeply informed to this day how I think about identifying opportunities and kind of cracking open the problem to find the solution. Microsoft is a little different. I mean, listen, Microsoft's a huge organization. But I ran a startup inside of Microsoft. I started a studio in San Francisco called Studio 415, the dialing code. And so inside the Studio 415, I'll be honest, that really shaped a lot of my thinking around Essensi, and really in two areas in particular. We were working with Microsoft's biggest brands, you know, our biggest customers, to help them reimagine the future in their industries, particularly in retail and automotive and car showrooms and, you know, the kind of car purchasing process. We were really helping them reimagine what their future looked like with digital. And there was two areas of focus for me. One was the world of intelligent digital assistants. Like, how do we create intelligent digital AI that complements and enhances us? Most people know Siri and Cortana. Think of that as a very narrow use case of an assistant that helps you search. It's almost like an AI for search. But really the vision for Cortana inside of Microsoft, and certainly the vision we had for Cortana, was much, much bigger. So that was, you can see how that's become the character of Essensi, and the idea that you have a digital assistant as a coach and understands your movement and how to coach you in your movement. And then the second team I spent a lot of time with inside of Microsoft was the team that invented Microsoft Kinect. And you guys probably all know Kinect as the camera that would fit on an Xbox and capture your skeleton. But one of the wonderful things about Kinect was your ability to not use it for gaming, but use it in other environments for physical therapy or for, what we call natural user interfaces, where you could gesture to the camera and the computer would just understand human movement. And so put those two things together, a deep understanding of human movement, intelligent digital assistants, and just my long-term fascination for wearable technology. And even though, you know, it was a sweet deal at Microsoft, I just couldn't bear being in the Bay Area, being an entrepreneur, being passionate about sports coaching, seeing all of these technologies, kind of like somebody needs to pull all of this together to solve sports coaching at scale. And so I quit and I did it. And then my wife told me she was pregnant.
Mac is awesome. Mike, you got something?
Mike, I was going to say, this is our moment as close as we get to how I built this, is that we didn't even have to ask the question. Steven just revealed that, you know, this is that moment that every entrepreneur goes through. They're faced with that thing. Yeah. Steven is somebody who is... go ahead.
I was just going to say, Mike, I often get asked that question. It's like, you know, how do you know you've got a good business idea? It's like, it's easy to come up with good ideas for business, but when you wake up in the morning, you're like, if I don't do this, someone else will. And if someone else does this, I'll be gutted because they won't do it as well as that. You know, they won't do it the way I'm thinking about it. I can't even describe the urgency and the acuteness of that fear. I mean, that was how I felt about Essensi. It's like, I have to do this. And I've had two or three moments in my life where I didn't act on that urgency. One of them was mint.com. That was my idea. I just knew, like, I have to do this. Like, this is not a choice I'm being given. This is a path I have to follow. And here we are.
I know. I think you summed up entrepreneurial, everybody talks about running through a brick wall. To me, it's more the, that idea that you can't live with yourself if you don't do it. And the fact that,
right,
you know, there are these momentous things happening in your life and you're still willing to go on that adventure. And somebody helped me change the mindset from, if you call it a venture can fail and it's not that attractive to others, but if you frame it up as an adventure, people want to come with you. And when I learned about your product, I, you know, had a concept two rower in the gym at my office and got to try it out. And it was amazing how little I knew fundamentally about rowing. Right. And so could you speak to, I mean, I know it's, you do more than just rowing, but can you speak to, you know, the AI coaching as it relates to rowing?
Yeah. So we had to make a decision. You know, we've not spent 5 years building a rowing app. We've spent 5 years building a platform that solves for the question of how do you make human movement and movement coaching legible, teachable, and understandable to a machine. Like, that was the big gnarly problem we had to solve. And then once we felt we'd solved 80% of that problem, we're like, okay, we need to like bring this thing into existence. We need real people to sit down and experience this and kind of test the experience. So we had to pick a sport. And to your point, that's why we, you know, after a very McKinsey consulting style experience of like, let's look at 50 different sports and decide which one is a good one to start, we picked indoor rowing, not even rowing, indoor rowing. And decided that that would be a good sport for us to introduce the Sensei coaching. And to be honest, there's lots of decisions I'll tell you, like, I wish we hadn't done this, but I love that we picked rowing. And it's really been the gift that keeps giving for us. And so, yeah, one of the beautiful things about rowing is there's pretty much an industry standard machine. And my apologies to Bruce at Hydro, although I'm sure Bruce would agree with me. But the concept to rower today, if you walk into most rowing clubs or you walk into gyms or you walk into a CrossFit box, you're going to see that concept to roar. And so we decided to bring a coaching product to market. And I'm always careful to make that distinction. It's not a workout app. It's a coaching app. We want to help you discover a passion for rowing and enjoy, look forward to your next workout. Because what am I going to learn today? I'm going to learn to get better. I'm not going to get better through perseverance and endurance. I'm going to get better through learning good form and good technique and good strategy and understanding the sport and understanding the machine. And so the concept to roar has a computer on it, a performance monitor, which we Bluetooth to, and we take all of the data from that performance monitor and we make sense of it. Obviously there's things like your speed, your split time, your power in your stroke, but there's a lot more nuanced data when you start looking at some of the power curves or the force curves that come from that rowing machine. I can read force curves like Keanu can read the matrix at this point. I can look at your curve and be like, yeah, you're not driving enough with your legs, or, you know, you've not got smooth transmission through your stroke. You're opening your back too early. You're tugging with your arms at the end of the stroke. So we were able to use rowing to introduce people to this idea that we can understand the quality, not just the quantity of your practice. And by focusing on improving that quality, we'll help you hit numbers. And I mean, listen, you know, I'm a big believer in like, let the product speak for itself, let the customer speak about the product. And if you go and look at the App Store reviews for Sensei, it's just right now, it's just full of people who are, you know, I thought I knew how to row, to your point. You know, I rowed in my CrossFit box and I thought it was good, but wow, you know, in the first few lessons, I got to spend time with an Olympic athlete who taught me the basics and kept me accountable to them, gave me that real-time feedback if I wasn't doing things as I should. And again, look at the App Store reviews and you'll see people that are dropping like big chunks of time off what's the industry standard distance, a 2 kilometer test. And frankly, we're just getting started. We've got product that we're going to start shipping later in the year that will allow us to look at your form across all sports in the most microscopic detail. And I look forward to telling you guys and the listeners all about those as well.
Fantastic. Stephen, I got a question for you. So earlier you mentioned working for these behemoth tech giants and, you know, envisioning the future for them. Doing that at a smaller scale, a startup scale, is a very different journey. Can you walk us through a little bit of the Sensei journey, kind of going from idea to proto to product?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I would say the grass is always greener, right? You know, when you're running an innovation group inside of Adobe, and you know this as well, Joel, I mean, for anyone that's listening, Joel and I were colleagues at Adobe years and years ago. You know, our destinies keep disappearing and re-entwining on a regular basis.
Yeah,
and, you know, yeah, I mean, you'll recall, I mean, inside of Adobe, you think you're frustrated by how slow you're moving, even though you're actually moving slow, but you kind of have near infinite resource. at the end of the day, inside of a company like Adobe or Microsoft, it's like, you know, I need a person with skill X. You can just go and get that skill. There's always someone. And even if they're not on the team that you're on or they're not in your cost center, they'll do you a favor. And then to get to a startup where you're like scarcity is a real thing. I mean, when, you know, the journey of the company, listen, I literally quit Microsoft. Actually, my co-founder, Bill, he was pretty much semi-retired. He'd taken his first company public. Bill's got a great story. Taking his first company public. He'd sat on the, you know, sat on the board, done some acquisitions. He'd basically retired out of that company. But to keep himself occupied, he was trying to get a job as a contract iOS developer because he enjoys programming. But he couldn't get a job. Everyone was suspicious. Like, why does this managing director of a formerly publicly listed speech recognition company want to work for me as an iOS developer? And he genuinely just wanted to do it for fun. So it's a long way of saying, you know, I reached out to Bill because, you know, I know Bill through sport coaching. He and I coach karate together at opposite ends of the UK. But we spent inordinate amounts of time and beer talking about sport and sport coaching and coaching methodologies. And so when I needed someone that was high tech and someone that was just like really understood the methodology of coaching, it had to be Bill. And so Bill actually took a month off his contract and said, I'm going to see if we can get the basics working. Can we do motion capture with sensors? And we had sensors taped. I should send you guys some pictures. In fact, I can see them over my shoulder right now. We had sensors. My black belt from karate had sensors like sewn into it. And you know, there was a moment where we realized after a month, we can do this. This is 5 years ago, but we're like, we can do this. This is technically possible. And that's when I quit Microsoft. And then it was Bill and my other co-founder, Ross, and I. It was us for a long period of time. And we just like slowly added contractors, Joel. And it wasn't until kind of the end of 2018, you know, we'd been raising angel money and we'd been paying contractors and, you know, paying friends in the industry to, you know, come and do 6 months work with us and 12 months work with us. But it wasn't until August of 2018, we're like, let's go out and like raise some venture money. Like, we're ready to take this to market. We think there's something we can take to market. So, you know, some people will kind of look, I've even had investors knock us back. They're like, we love the team. We love the product. We love the vision. The time is now. But, you know, it's taken you guys kind of a long time to get here. And it's like, you know, okay, I guess this is wrong fit because, you know, every overnight success took 6 years to get there, right? And we really had to, like, ask ourselves hard questions about how we were going to get this product to market. So, I would say, Joel, it's been a bootstrap endeavor. It's been an endeavor of, like, test and learn and move in this direction and this doesn't feel right, move in that direction. And if you look back, it wasn't a straight line. But if you look at the strategy and the vision, if you look at the video that we shot before we'd written a line of code, that's literally what we've delivered today. So for most people, they'll look back and say, you guys just did a straight line path to implement what you said you were going to do. But there was a lot of twists and turns along the way. Does that answer your question?
It does. It does. And I was actually digging for some of the more candid stories of Bill, the engineer, kind of beta testing the product and demoing it and kind of your experiences there. I know you have some funny war stories you can share.
Oh my goodness. I remember the first time I saw the product, literally we flew to London. My son was like 5 months old. We flew to London. Bill lives in London. My business partner who hadn't met Bill, but they've been working together for like 6 months. Ross is up in Edinburgh, Scotland. We're all in my friend's apartment. And without even thinking about it, without even saying hello to my friends who are in the apartment, Bill just strips down to his underwear, starts pulling on Lycra, like shorts, Lycra shirt. And at that point, we were head tracking with a swimming cap that had a sensor sewn into the top. So Bill is just like standing there basically naked in red Lycra. And like all my friends are like, this is your business partner? You quit Microsoft for this? And the first thing we implemented was yoga coaching. And I remember seeing Bill just go through a yoga flow and essentially correctly calling out all the poses and postures. It just worked. And honestly, it was just this like heart-stopping moment of like, my goodness, like how? And even though I know how every line of sensor code and I know the, you know, I know the circuit design of the sensors, I know all the software platform, it was still, and you know that phrase, Joel, any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. It was magic. It was just a magical moment. And there's just been I don't want to name drop, but you know, we've met some of the greatest people in the NFL and basketball players, and I've just had these insane moments of like, I can't believe I'm showing this to person X. And it's always the same reaction. The first time people see it, and we haven't talked about this, but the enabling technology for Essensi is ordinary compression apparel that has sensors infused in it that understand your skeleton. And when people see it, they think, surely there's a camera looking at you, or surely there's like a person on the other side. It's like, no, your clothes understand your posture and they understand your form and they can coach you in real time to correct. So yeah, so many of those stories. We probably need an NDA with all your viewers before I can tell them all, though.
Well, I was going to say, you're welcome to name drop anytime because it's apparently good for SEO. So,
Well, I will tell you one story because I don't think you would be offended. We had a potential investor whose son was in the football program at University of Michigan. And so with very little notice, Bill and I got asked to fly out to University of Michigan to meet with Jim Harbaugh. It was the day after signing day. So the day before, I think like Tom Brady had been there. And, you know, Jim's, when I say he was late for the meeting, he was like literally stood outside the door because all the new recruits were like wide-eyed, this is coach. And we're in the players' room. And the demo we gave, we'd previously pulled together a demo. I've never told this story before. I can't believe I'm telling you guys this. We'd previously put together a demo that we hoped we were going to pitch to Victoria's Secret because they had a line of sports apparel called VSX. And so we had this demo that we'd put together for them, which was Train Like an Angel with one of the South Africa supermodels. And we quickly reskinned that demo to look like a Tom Brady demo. So all the exercises we were doing with Tom Brady were actually Train Like an Angel with a South African supermodel. So I guess the end of the story is like Bill stood there in the room with Jim Harbaugh and the brand new Michigan football team. And nobody except he and I knew that he was doing Victoria's Secret workouts, trying to convince Jim Harbaugh that we could use this for the football program. So that was a fun week.
Now, thanks to Joel. So I know Bill, and Bill, if you're out there, visual of you naked in my head and now dancing Harbaugh. So two perfect images. I thank you for. Joel. But Steven, so you know, we talked, I guess, man, when we spoke at Harvest Summit together, I remember I remember you almost wrecked and on the highway, but that we'll leave that story for later. But two,
I don't remember that. It happens all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't. But I remember talking to you about your customers and how you referenced I think it was LinkedIn's founder, Reid Hoffman, how you just need 1,000 customers, getting to that 1,000. And what did you learn from getting your first 1,000? And like what was the biggest one or two takeaways from getting the product for people to try it? You just alluded to the App Store reviews and other things. Any surprises, anything you can share with our listeners?
That's a great question. I think, again, I go back to the, Adobe, we talked about design-led innovation. And a big part of that process is, Joel, I'm going to try out a bunch of the old lines here. But you should build software that works the way people work, not the way software works. You got to start with the user. And so it's very much about prototyping. And I'm, don't get me started on the lean startup and MVPs. And, I'm happy to tell you why I think that's not always the right approach. But I do think you have to very quickly try and get a version of what you think is right in the hands of customers. And so we spent a good period of like 3 or 4 months, just every day, my founders and I would be running clinics, running workshops, going to CrossFit boxes, going to Rowan studios, literally driving to people's house because someone knew someone that liked to row. And we were sitting them down on a rowing machine. They had no idea what they were about to experience. We'd ask permission to video them while they followed along to a single workout, a single lesson with Essensi. And then at the end, still on camera, we would ask them questions. The first question was always on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to tell somebody about what just happened in the next 24 hours? And 1 in 3 people gave us a 10. you know, so for a net promoter score to be getting like a 10 was phenomenal. And that's when we're like, okay, we're onto something. But then we just like really went through this kind of first process of, we just need to build something that like 20 people love. And then the next hard thing in all of that is, how are we going to get this to a point where, you know, there's 100 or 200 or 500 people that love it. And then how do we get them to pay for it? So we didn't even turn the paywall for the product on until around October, November of last year, because we'd got to a point where we're like, okay, there's, you know, and I don't want to give like hard numbers, but there's, you know, tens of thousands of people who are willing to, use the Sensei because it's free and they want to try it. But how many of them can we convert into paying customers? And, you know, I mean, what I will say is like, you know, this last quarter, January to March, we were double our target. And this month we just closed out April yesterday, and we were triple our target for April. So even asking people to pay for it, you know, we're seeing that, you know, we're just delivering value that's exactly the value people are looking for. But, you know, everybody wants to be like, how are you going to get to a million users? And that's the wrong question. I'm a big believer that in the early days of a product, it's better to have a small number of people that love the product than a large number of people that are relatively apathetic about it.
Total side note, how, you know, having started with rowing and being able to, you know, track these sort of things, what's the furthest you've gone on the concept too?
I am not a rower. Ask me how many trophies I've won in karate and I'll answer the question. I am not a rower. It's funny, like I've always been, which one is it, the crocodile or the alligator that's like really dangerous over about 10 meters and then you're okay because they kind of lose all their energy? That's me. I'm a short burst, you know, karate guy. I'll be wicked fast for 10 seconds and then I need 30 seconds to bounce around and recover. So running, rowing, cycling, those are not my sports. But I will say, one of the things I do love about rowing is I love how technical it is. You know, for me, rowing is very zen. You know, I can just sit on that machine and really kind of focus in. And that's a big goal of a Sensei, actually. Like, we want to match your challenge to your skill so that we're creating the conditions for flow. That's an underlying philosophy of the platform. And so we want to create those conditions for flow. And I find, you know, I mean, I sip my own champagne and I use the Sensei products on a very regular basis. And I just enjoy the process of learning. For me, it's not about, you know, hitting a half marathon, which I'll probably never do, or what's my 6K time or my 2K time. Actually, I really just enjoy that process of learning and of feeling like I'm getting better at the sport. And, you know, that's what resonates with our customers as well.
So clearly karate has been a big part of your life. When I talked to you, you had a funny story. You were supposed to actually be in Braveheart and something happened.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So yeah, I coached Edinburgh University Karate Club. I think this story is when I was maybe the captain, I was captain of the club. And I remember we didn't have email addresses as students. Like, we had pigeonholes, we had these little cubby holes that you would go to pick up your mail every week. And there was like a casting call from a film company that they wanted a bunch of people, you know, just, you know, men to show up and be part of a movie. And so we were like, that'd be a great thing to do with the club. Let's go and do it. But in typical karate club fashion, we went out on a Friday night after training and nobody made the bus on the Saturday morning. But it did turn out that it was for one of the battles in Braveheart. Yeah, there's a lesson to everybody there. Don't go out drinking after training on a Friday night. You never know that you might miss your big movie opportunity. Well remembered.
And now we got to move back to something maybe a little bit more serious. But, you know, how is a Sensei responding during COVID? What's, I think companies are finding, you know, silver linings in some ways, and in other ways, it's obviously putting a strain on what they're doing.
You know, I think, you know, I have to say, like, I really wrestled with my conscience initially. And I, you know, someone else, I don't know, I can't remember who, but someone else used the metaphor of survivor guilt, which I thought was pretty apt. I think, you know, it's incredibly distressing to kind of look around the local community and, like, you know, friends, you know, obviously as an entrepreneur, you have many colleagues who are founders, and seeing rounds get pulled and seeing rounds not close, or seeing companies that were like it was critical that they raise funding in the next 3 or 4 months, and then suddenly there's no way they're going to raise funding in the next 12, 18 months. So yeah, it's humbling to just kind of look around at the entire ecosystem of local business to early stage startups and just see this decimation. But the survivor guilt that I describe is like, this is a tailwind for us. You know, we've always had the premise that people want to practice unsupervised, but they accept that when you're practicing a sport or activity unsupervised, you're not being coached or you can't afford a personal trainer or a coach. So as I described to someone else, the problem that we set out to solve, a question I used to always get asked in investor pitches, like, well, I understand that lots of people participate in the sport, but how many of them care about being watched and coached? And overnight, the answer was 100%, because everybody was working at home. We had schools calling us and saying, we know that the school's going to shut down. We're sending the rowing machines home with the school kids. Can we give them a group purchase of a Sensei so that every school kid's got the motivation of an Olympic athlete to make sure that they're still practicing and they're motivated to practice at home? So yeah, for us, we kind of had this like, well, how do we strike the right tone? Like, how do we, I don't even want to use the phrase take advantage, because that sounds like we're taking advantage, but how do we respond to this opportunity? How do we help as many people as we can? Because, you know, everybody's working out at home. So yeah, I think for many of my friends and colleagues in the digital fitness industry, you know, we're just seeing, we're seeing demand for products that we weren't forecasting. I mean, for me, the demand I'm having in April matches what I hope to have in sort of August or September after pretty aggressive month-on-month growth. And, you know, to be blunt, we just feel good about the fact that we have an opportunity to play a part. I think a big thing for all of us in this whole coronavirus is we kind of feel helpless. It's like this is happening to us. And what can we do? And I don't know if this is a British phrase or not, the Dunkirk spirit, but there's this kind of Dunkirk spirit, this idea that like we're all going to band together through something that would be otherwise overwhelmingly adverse. And I think we're seeing a lot of that happening. And so, yeah, it's we're seeing a lot of growth. It's hard to predict whether we'll build from that or whether, you know, we'll slide back down from it as everybody returns home. But I think one of the things we're going to see out of coronavirus is a lot of behavior shifts that will never go back to normal. The new normal, whether it's work at home, whether it's workout at home, this, you know, telemedicine, you know, I think a lot of norms have been challenged, and a lot of the fears that people had about whether those new norms would work or not, you know, the question's been answered en masse on a global scale, and the world's going to look different. So yeah, we just have to push forward with our vision. And you know, for Ascenti, you know, it's about sport, but it's also, you know, we're in trials with physical therapy and how can we deliver physical therapy remotely? And now there's never been more of a need to be able to do that with social distancing. So, yeah, there's lots of opportunities for us to play a part in helping with the recovery. And, you know, we're humbled to have the chance to step up and do that.
So, Stephen, you've told us a lot about kind of, you know, some inspirations of how you got to founding Ascenti and then some current updates. I'd love to explore what's next in the future roadmap, and maybe you have some good updates on potential products that you've developed.
No, definitely. I think, listen, when we started the company, the fundamental problem we wanted to solve was how can we make, you know, movement coaching possible? So, you know, the technology we had to invent to do that was how could we track posture and form? And there's really two ways we could have gone. One was using computer vision, and one was using something that was more sensor-based. You know, we looked at sensors and straps, sensors and equipment. And ultimately, for many reasons, we determined that putting sensors in apparel and that the emergence of smart apparel would be something that would happen over the 3 or 4 years that we thought it would take to market. So that's where we are today. I'm literally looking at boxes of what looks like ordinary compression apparel, but that compression apparel is infused with a constellation of sensors that track your skeleton. So hundreds of times a second from 360 degrees, we're streaming to your phone from your base layer, your posture and form. And Ascenti understands that and understands it in the vocabulary of the sport that you're practicing. So this is super exciting. We're all these boxes that are finally sitting in the office, having made their way to us. These boxes are going out to a bunch of different evaluation partners, people who are interested in evaluating Ascensi to integrate as part of their product, alongside their product, and also for some of our early adopters and customers. So we're in this intensive phase of kicking people out in our smart apparel, and we'll be releasing that towards the end of the year.
That is awesome. You got to let me know what I got to do to get on the waiting list for VIP access. But
just give you a credit card. Just read out your credit card number right now for all of us. And
Yeah, it might get declined. So two things, and I don't know if this was your group or by accident, but I did see Smart App Arrow. Is that a play on words that you guys developed for the marketing to go to market?
Yeah, you know, it is. I mean, we're calling it apparel. You know, as I say to people, you know, this is the invention, but we call it apparel, app connected apparel. And we put the word app in brackets so that people understand, like, oh, that's something to do with an app. I hate the phrase smart apparel. No one's ever going to walk into Nike Town and say, like, where's the smart apparel? I don't want dumb apparel anymore. We, you know, who cares if it's smart? What does it do? What does it allow me to do better? So we want to distinguish it as something different, but you know, I really have a problem with this idea that it's the apparel that's smart. That's just the enabling technology for something smarter. And for us, that's a coaching platform. As hard as it has been to design low-cost, low-power sensors that can be manufactured into any apparel, our goal is to license that technology to other apparel manufacturers. As hard as that is, once you have that stream of data on your phone, so what? Now what? You know, actually teaching Ascensi how to understand the movement, understand the sport, to watch you do a deadlift, and like, what should she do in this moment? Should she coach you some pointers on that actual deadlift, or have you nailed the deadlift and it's time to move on to a clean, or is the deadlift, is there something so egregiously wrong, like your squat mechanics? It's time to put the barbell down and start working on our squats. So how you move someone through a teaching syllabus and how you progress them and regress them through technique, that's really hard to solve. So we really have been developing this IP for the last, you know, 4 years, both on the hardware, firmware, apparel side, and on the software platform side. And everything we've done in rowing has allowed us to like test the experience of being coached by a digital AI, and how do you bring coaches to athletes. So we've learned a lot about user experience, but the magic is going to happen when that pairs with your apparel. I can't wait for you to experience that for yourself.
That's awesome. I at risk of being sued by Marvel, I think Jarvis should be the name. That would be great. Wearing your own. You know, the last thing, Stephen, and we'll get you out of here on this, a little, you know, your opinion on the whole digital fitness push. Obviously, we talked COVID and what's going on. But more specifically, there are now, I don't know, almost 10 or a dozen competitors in the at-home fitness space between Mirror, Tonal, Form, we talked about earlier with an E, that is, I believe. And yeah, it's just so interesting that all of these companies are probably doing pretty well right now. However, you know, what happens if you're trying to do a deadlift or a squat and you get injured? Is Tonal responsible for that? Like, that brings up a whole nother angle, which is your...
Yep.
Blue white space or blue ocean opportunity. Can you talk a little bit about that?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, first of all, I'm just, you know, I'm delighted by the growth of the connected fitness category. And I think there's plenty of growth left in it. You know, just as a technologist, these are products I've wanted my whole life. And so, you know, it's great to see them. I think there are, you highlight a couple of challenges though. Right now, every product is a like multi-$1,000 purchase with a $40, $50 a month subscription. And so it forces consumers to kind of like pick a platform and pick a choice. And that doesn't, you know, for me, I've always been someone that wants to be an all-rounder. I want to do some TRX. I want to do some kettlebells. I want to do some running. I want to do some weightlifting. I want to do some body weight. The idea that I have to lock into just a bike or just a treadmill or just a strength training machine, you know, that's, so there's a scale problem that needs to be solved. And ultimately, I think that will be a consolidation opportunity for whomever is the winner that takes all in connected fitness. To your point about liability, I think it's something everyone's aware. I mean, I speak with these companies, and you know, I think everyone's aware that form coaching is necessary from a safety perspective, and also just from a, if you really want to deliver the best imaginable experience, It's one thing to hop on a bike. We all know pretty much how to ride a bike. But as soon as you get onto something like a strength training machine or a rowing machine, or you're trying to do yoga or barre or anything else, not having an instructor there who's watching your form and adjusting that class for you, you know, we can argue with lawyers whether it's negligent or not, but it's coaches, it's not good coaching. And so for Ascensi, we're not trying to be the other alternative platform. We're showing the world with the rowing product that we've launched. We're doing some collaboration with TRX. And, you know, I want you to do bodyweight exercises with $200 TRX straps and, you know, your regular sports apparel. I don't need you to be dropping $4,000 or $5,000 to be doing strength training in your home. But we're doing those examples so that we can be an ingredient inside other products. So whether it's a legacy product like TRX or whether it's a new connected fitness product, we're offering the technology and the platform and the know-how to bring form and technique coaching and to bring the ability to lead your customers and lead your athletes through a multi-year teaching syllabus to bring personal training to group fitness. And so yeah, the more of these products, the merrier. And I think, you know, form and technique coaching will become a price of admission feature. And we're there to make it an easy integration for people.
Wow. I mean, and last thing, and we'll close. Can you imagine if, you know, all of the new, we'll call them newbies, who entered the post-COVID world to try to do at-home fitness? I'm thinking of Core Power. Yes, I'm talking about you. Think about if they had, you know, the Ascensi apparel platform to be able to use their ambassadors and coaches to extend that one-to-one digital relationship offering.
I mean, that is exactly what we're offering. And, you know, I've been speaking with, you know, leaders in, again, the health and fitness industry. And, you know, as I say, like, you know, we've always been here offering you a digital platform for at home to supplement your membership. But now more than ever, I mean, I pay, you know, hundreds of dollars a month for family memberships to gyms across the Bay Area. And the experience I'm getting right now is somebody Facebook live streaming from their kitchen. I can get better quality coaching with YouTube ambassadors for free. I don't need to be paying hundreds of dollars. So I think that, you know, I think something that's happened with COVID is we've absolutely commoditized and raced to zero the idea of a fitness stream of an instructor and even of a live stream. And so now, you know, when something becomes commoditized, you have to differentiate on experience. And I think the experience opportunity to differentiate is like, well, our live stream comes with form coaching. And I've got every yoga studio in North America offering me $30 a month for their live stream class. I'll pay $50 a month for the first one that can actually correct me and coach me on my technique and form and not ask me to do things that I'm not capable of doing yet and help me to get into poses by breaking the pose apart and putting it back together. First person to do that, I think, is the winner, and then everyone else will have to follow. And once again, that's the opportunity we saw with Ascensi 5 years ago. And that's the opportunity we're offering people right now. And I'm super excited to be able to help people do that.
Well, I can't wait to watch it unfold, man. And we'll have to bring you back on at a later episode once the full launch is going and get some updates. But Stephen Webster, CEO, founder of Ascensi, thanks for joining us today, man.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
You can subscribe to this podcast on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, play hard or at least look good doing it.